Today, a bus driver was shot and killed earlier in Montgomery County, Maryland. Conrad Johnson, a 35-year-old father of two, was shot as he stood at the top of the steps of the bus he drove for a living. Officially, police have yet to link the attack to the serial murderer who has killed 9 other people in the Washington area this month and wounded 3 others. They do say, though, that it bears all the hallmarks of the serial sniper. Joining us now to talk about the psychology of serial killers and how they communicate with police is Dr. Michael McGrath. He's a forensic psychiatrist and president of the Academy of Behavioral Profiling, and he joins us today from his office in Rochester, New York. And Dr. McGrath, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
First of all, I guess one of the things we're all learning over the past couple of weeks is that there are a lot of different definitions of serial killer.
Well, serial killer essentially is someone who kills more than one person with a cooling off period or a significant period of time in between. And a spree killer is someone who kills several people in a fairly short period of time. Now, some people argue over, disagree with mm-hmm. how many people one would have to kill to be a serial killer. Some would claim 2 is enough, some would say 3, some 4. But I think one gets the picture. Now, a spree killer is someone who, like Andrew Cannon, was killing someone in a short period of time. And the Maryland sniper killings, the first day that they started, where in the first 20 hours or so, there were like 5 killings or shootings, that would be considered a spree. But once there was time, significant time, for the person to cool off or think about what they're doing, then it continues and continues. So this person has actually now started off, let's say, as a spree killer, but turned into a serial killer.
If you have questions, by the way, about what's going on and what the police are using in terms of behavioral profiling and other techniques to try to find whoever is behind this this series of killings, give us a phone call. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, again, is totn@npr.org. And Dr. McGrath, the police in the Washington, D.C. area, that's Chief Moose, who's running the Joint Task Force up in Rockville, Maryland, they say they've received phone calls and a note from the sniper, the famous tarot card, of course, as well. Mm-hmm. Is this unusual behavior for a serial killer to communicate with the police?
It's not unheard of, but it's unusual. You don't get it that often. A very well-known case was the Zodiac killings in California, and also the Son of Sam killings in New York City, where there was communication between the killer and the police, but that's actually quite uncommon.
And going back a long way, Jack the Ripper, but I guess that's controversial. Who knows how many of those hundreds of notes were genuine or not at this point?
Well, some of them they feel were genuine, but you're correct. They started receiving a whole more than they needed.
Why would a killer communicate with the police?
There's a lot of this has to do with believe it or not, low self-esteem and feeling and taking control of one's life, because this individual right now is essentially controlling police. He's controlling a community, and he may never have felt this kind of control before in his life. The I'm missing the main point. What was the
Why would he communicate with the police?
Right.
Presumably, he's giving them information.
Yeah. This person actually wants the respect of the police, believe it or not. What develops is a kind of pseudo-mutuality in that they start to feel almost that they are the equals of the police, because they see themselves as outsmarting the police, getting the police to do what they want, etc. But actually, as strange as it may seem, deep down inside, they actually want the respect of the police.
Are they communicating with the police? I mean, a lot of the notes, and again, we've not seen any of the material that's come out from this most recent case, but the Son of Sam, he was taunting the police a lot of the time. But is the communication, you know, does it help them solve the crime?
It depends. Any contact, the communication is evidence. Just like any other piece of evidence, it may very well help the police to, hone in on this person. They have very sophisticated individuals who can look at the language used in communiques and stuff like that, which may or may not be helpful in trying to narrow down the suspect pool.
It struck me as especially unusual for a phone number to be involved. And again, this comes from the statements, the public statements by Chief Moose. I mean, they're talking about the number there is a phone number involved.
Well, I don't know the specifics of the phone number, but it may very well be that the phone number for a payphone was given. And so the expectation is that this individual knows that number and would call that number. This individual also must know that by doing this stuff, they increase the chances of them getting caught. So they must in some way have at least figured out how they're going to communicate without making it obvious who they are or where they are.
Yeah. Our first caller is Ryan, who's with us from Minneapolis.
Hello, gentlemen. It's good to talk to you today.
Sure.
My question is, and I guess I didn't really hear this, your speaker's credentials. I'm assuming he's got some background expertise in serial killers. And I guess my question is, why has there not been any, I guess from the media attention that I've seen, there hasn't really been any thought given to that this person might actually be a terrorist aligned with Al-Qaeda or some other group, as far as I can remember from what I've seen of, like, the Al-Qaeda manuals, that this is, you know, straight out of their text and what they would do in terms of bringing terrorism to the United States. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yep.
Okay, I don't think anyone has ruled that out 100%. But the things speaking for this being a Al-Qaeda terrorist are that shooting Americans or sniping them has been mentioned in some of their manuals, and we believe that some people have received training in that. They've made comments about shooting Americans where they shop, where, you know, affecting our commerce and shooting us in the malls and stuff like that. There's also issues related to, I'm trying to think, my mind is going blank here. I apologize.
That's all right.
The tarot card, a Muslim, very unlikely, even though we know that not all these people are super religious, very unlikely a Muslim would have written, "I am God." The other thing is that this person seems to be very responsive to the media as far as where they're going and what they're doing. Now, it's unlikely that a disciplined group of terrorists would be responding to the media and or things that are being said in the media that way. So I don't think that anyone has completely 100% ruled that out. It's just that it really doesn't fit this picture.
Let's go now to Ron, who's with us from Trenton, New Jersey.
Yes. Basically, I believe that this sniper, who I do not believe is a military-trained sniper, as some people would like to believe, he has adjusted his tactics based on what he's heard in the media. And if you notice that once they said they put that military aircraft up in the sky, he went further south than the other went before. And then after he shot someone in that area, he moved back into his original territory.
And indeed, early on, there was, he isn't shooting anybody on the weekend, and then
he shot someone on the weekend to let them know that he'll strike when and where he can. But the most important thing is that he... One of his messages, that tarot card with death, where he said, "Mr. Policeman," and I agree that he's trying to gain the respect of the police, because that sounded childish, "Mr. Policeman." But the other part is that has a religious connotation. I am God. God takes lives. He gives life. He's taking them at will. I don't believe that he's military trained, because as of yet, he has not hit a moving target. Every one of his targets are stationary. Military trained snipers are trained to hit moving targets. The worst case scenario in point is President Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. McGrath?
The issue of military training, I think, is a good one, because I don't think we can rule out that this is a military-trained person. On the other hand, the caller makes a very good point in that one does not have to be have any military training to be taking the kind of shots that this individual is taking. These are, I wouldn't characterize them as ridiculously simple, but these are not very difficult shots. This would be not a difficult shot for a sniper at all.
And the other point about listening to the media and adapting his tactics?
That's a very good point, and it's been like that from the beginning. And not only did this individual move outside 70 or 90 miles outside of the area where these surveillance planes might be overhead, but now that he has moved back in, I don't know exactly where every shot was fired before, but it seems to me that now the shots seem to be coming from wooded areas. So this person seems to be placing himself in a position where if there is a surveillance plane overhead, it won't be able to see anything.
Exactly.
Ron, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
And very quickly, Dr. McGrath, why do we assume he's a man?
At this point, I'm assuming he's a man, although there's absolutely no guarantee. But the if we had to, so to speak, put our money where our mouth is, I would say that this is a man. It's possible it's a woman, but statistically, it wouldn't be a woman. And as time goes on, it just seems less and less in everyone's consciousness that this is a woman, although it can't be ruled out.
Dr. McGrath, thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Dr. McGrath is a forensic psychiatrist, president of the Academy of Behavioral Profiling, and the author of Beyond Hate, and he was with us on the line from his office in Rochester, New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.